Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Starting today, Film Forum is hosting a retrospective celebration of the 10th anniversary of the Soros Sundance Documentary Fund. Bruni Burres, director of the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival, and Gara LaMarche, vice president of the Open Society Institute, he also sits on the board of the Sundance Documentary Fund, are both here to talk about how documentaries can spur social change. And they are joined by filmmaker Antoine Katin, whose new short, There Are Women in Russian Villages, is playing at the Film Forum on Sunday. Antoine's documentary focuses on the lives of two women in rural Russia, where poverty and domestic violence are often part of everyday life. I'm very pleased to welcome them all to this show today. And let's begin with you, Bruni. Is film more powerful or immediate than other forms of media?
Absolutely. I would say documentary filmmaking has changed enormously in the past 10 years, not just with the style and the format that the films are told, the stories are told, but with the approach that the filmmakers, distributors, and, say, human rights organizations like Open Society Institute work with these films to make sure that they achieve the maximum amount of exposure as well as impact.
So, Gara, are there certain stories that just can't be fully captured in print?
Well, I'm not sure there are stories that can't be fully captured in print, but I think that film obviously adds a dimension of immediacy and is a medium that many people respond better to and really get the whole human grasp of things. So these documentaries that we're highlighting in the film festival that starts tonight at the Film Forum, the kind of a sampling of some of the films we've supported through the first Soros and then Sundance documentary funds over the years, at root are powerful stories about human beings, and that's what makes them compelling to people. There's nothing really didactic about them. People learn by really having direct exposure to people's lives and the human rights issues they're facing.
Antoine, your film takes us into the daily lives of two women, a mother and a daughter living in rural Russia. What did you want to communicate about their lives with your film?
Actually, I have to say first a few words about the frame, the context in which it was made, which is one of the numerous activities of Soros. There is the Institute for Social and Gender Policy, and I think they had a great idea of spending money not just on conferences and seminars, but making films. And our film is just one of many films, actually, 10 or, I don't even know, 12 films, which come from Russia and from the former Republic of the Soviet Union. And in our film, all what we make is more or less by accident. We just met with those people and we wanted to show the way they live, the way they cope with life, having fled a husband and a father, which was drinking, which was beating them up and so forth, but still made had 8 children with her, with the woman, with the wife. And we just actually show the way they live, and that was actually the main intention in the beginning. And the fact that we had the proposal of Soros was for us a great impact to start, actually. It was for it. So just the beginning of a long story, because we started 2 years ago with the shooting, and we are still on now, actually almost finishing and working on the editing for another film, which will be a long film about them, the same woman, but other characters as well.
Well, the opening shots are of the mother's many children sleeping in the dark, and we hear her describing how each was born. That sets the scene there. You said that you just met her somehow. How do you wind up meeting somebody in rural Russia?
That's just happened to be
wandering down the road.
We actually made another film, which was also kind of related to humanitarian questions about Chechen refugees, and in that village. That's our former film, which is called Life in Peace, and it's mostly about men. And in that village, there was this other family with those women. And when we were making the shooting of the previous film, when we were too tired of the men, we went to have some rest at the women's place. And that's how we got to know them, and that's how we actually met them. And only afterward, a year after, we started to make the film about them. So it's more or less by accident, I would say. But we were immediately touched and interested because it's not so common, actually, to have... It's very common in Russia to have women supporting everything. So the entire society is actually based on women, even I would say among the states at the highest level. But there are so many children, and the life was so interesting and so... how can I say that? It was actually... although they are living really in very poor conditions, and they work as milking cows at the farm, so it's like the lowest level, I would say, in the society in general, and especially here in Russia, their life is still very joyful and exciting. So we wanted to catch that and show it, actually.
How common is this situation? I know that alcoholism is a serious problem, but what about a woman with 8 kids? Is that typical?
No, that's what I was saying, that it's not typical that there are so many children. It's typical that the women are doing everything.
Yeah.
And it's the same in the cities. Often the fathers are absent. Either they are not there at all because they have been divorced, or he's not taking a real active role in the life, actually. What we want to say with the film, you can see it in the short film, which will be shown now in New York, but what will be in the longer version will be actually maybe the root of those problems, because it shows actually a paradox that those women are actually, they are suffering from men. She eventually escaped from the husband. But in the same time, she's growing up children who will become those weak men again. You understand what I mean?
Yes.
From which they will suffer.
There is a cycle here.
This will be the main theme, actually, of the longer film. Now it's just the one which is now shown is based actually on one day in the life of. We just introduce the characters and so forth. But further, we show more the relationship between mother and son. And it's actually the working title of the film, Mother and Sons.
Rooney, were most of the films in this retrospective made with a specific goal in mind?
I think that all of these films, actually similar to what Antoine is talking about with his film, were made by filmmakers who were very interested in telling a specific story quite intimately. They weren't just going in to tell a story about street children, spend a few days with the children, say, in Bucharest and Romania, and then leave and make a journalistic piece. I think they were all very much interested in understanding a story, the complexity of a community and a group, by spending a lot of time with them.
And then it's easier for the audience to relate to someone from another culture if they can actually see on film just how they live.
Absolutely. And there's an emotion that comes through filmmaking and video making that really penetrates and affects an audience, I think, is one of the strongest parts of film and video making that doesn't happen with the written word as often.
So you think documentary films are effective tools for social change?
Absolutely.
Well, Gara, have any of the films in the series had a concrete impact?
Yeah. No, they have. I think that first I just want to say that the films that we fund through the Soros Documentary Fund and then the Sundance Documentary Funds are the best ones, the ones that we try to look for and that we try to support, are the ones that are in the intersection of art and social consciousness. Propaganda or stuff that really is an advocacy document and is designed and cooked in a certain way is never very effective and isn't the kind of films we want to fund. People have to pursue whatever truth that they see. The gender montage films, the film we were just talking about the women in Russian villages, is part of an interesting series that OSI does that pairs filmmakers and advocates in the post-Soviet countries, and they all have a social change action agenda built into them. And there's a policy thing that advocates then carry through. The Soros Documentary Fund films and Sundance Documentary Fund films generally are not made with a specific policy goal in mind, but we do try to marry them to advocates in the Foundation Network. So Calling the Ghosts, for instance.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about, because that film actually led to prosecutions.
Absolutely. The ones that Calling the Ghosts, which is one of the first batches of films we funded in 1996, is about the struggle of two Bosnian women for justice for their rapes in a Serbian concentration camp. And after it was at the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival, which is a wonderful outlet, now global, I think, in scope for a lot of these kinds of films. HBO has picked up a lot of them. They did pick up Calling the Ghosts, and it actually helped to raise consciousness and awareness and lead to actual capture and prosecution of people. The same is true of State of Fear, about the Peruvian situation with Fujimori. That's being shown all over the world in countries which are facing transitional justice issues. So, yes, you can really have an impact with the films, but they're best when they're made to tell a story and to tell a truth, and then can be used by advocates to press for change.
But as Gara says, Antoine, these films are not meant to be propaganda. On the other hand, there's an awful lot of editorial choice and personal style that goes into making a documentary. And I'm assuming it's hard sometimes to strike a balance between making a compelling film and staying true to the subject matter.
You see, I'm actually very interested in what your guests are speaking about, and the fact that they are showing this kind of film and our film in New York. For me, it's very exciting, and it's very also surprising in the same time, because my feeling is that on one hand, what Bruni said is right. You have a tendency, some changes in documentary filmmaking because of the technique. It's much easier and cheaper, and almost anyone can take a camera and start working. But on the other hand, there is more and more influence by television, which is almost the only financially supporting system for documentary filmmaking nowadays, and they are usually very formatted, and I would say that the general tendency is more towards this kind of propaganda kind of film. And I have been, for example, in the jury of human rights film festival. There are many of them. It's pretty fashionable, I would say, even in countries like in Russia, and some new festivals are appearing. And I was in the Czech Republic. One People in Need, it's called. And in general, the film I saw there were more this kind of reportage type of film. You know what I mean? In where you have a leading commentary, where you have more journalistic facts, social facts, political facts, and so forth. What I am doing is quite the opposite. It's more like Bruni said, more the maybe artistical approach. And of course, there are many challenges in storytelling. But for us, the most important is the main message is the story, is the characters, the way they live, the way they speak, and not our commentaries on them. You know.
Let me ask both Gara and Bruni: how do you, when you're assessing a film, decide that this film isn't skewed, isn't making a point that may not be 100% true, or moving things around? A number of very popular
films in recent years have been accused of moving things out of sequence to make a point.
All films have a point of view, and all filmmakers, I hope, are going to be show their point of view, and that's what can make the film very strong as well. If with all of the films that we've chosen here and that are showing in the series this weekend, beginning tonight with Calling the Ghost, follow individuals. They follow people around who are telling to the camera and telling to the audience their story. If there are facts in some of these films that need verification or clarification, Human Rights Watch, the Open Society Institute can absolutely work with experts to clarify that those facts are correct. But otherwise, these films are telling a point of view, and they are the filmmaker's point of view.
Yeah, and I think the fact that both the Human Rights Watch Film Festival and the Documentary Fund that was first run by Soros and now Sundance are hooked into these networks of either OSI or Human Rights Watch, which have a lot of human rights experience and ability to really assess the essential truth, is a big plus. But I also think what makes these films interesting, and back to the kind of art part of them, is that when they make you think and they tell what may be inconvenient truths. And so they either make you think in the way you take Born into Brothels, which had a very successful commercial run, it ran the Academy Award. Zahna Brzezinski, who we'd given a fellowship to actually before she started the film, to go and work with the children in brothels in India.
Who took photographs.
Who helped the kids become photographers. A lot of people looking at that film, including in our own shop, have mixed feelings about it. What about the rest of the kids? You're not really changing the circumstances of their lives. It's a kind of a rescue mission. It raises all those kinds of issues, and that's fine. People come out of the theater and they're talking about it, and they have different points of view about it. Iran Veiled Appearances will be shown during the festival is an amazing film for anybody who's trying to think about Iran and Iran in the world today. And some of the images you come away with, particularly the younger Iranian men and women and their political attitudes and social attitudes, is a scene where a number of veiled women are jumping out of a plane doing skydiving, will inevitably alter the way you at least broaden your picture of what is going on in Iran.
My guests are Gara LaMarche, Vice President of the Open Society Institute, also sits on the board of the Sundance Documentary Fund, Bruni Burris, director of the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival, and Antoine Katin, film director. His new short, There Are Women in Russian Villages, is playing as part of a retrospective celebration of the 10th anniversary of the Soros Sundance Documentary Fund, beginning today at the Film Forum, but his film will be shown on Sunday. And Bruni, Antoine mentioned that television is where most of these films are shown, but we've been seeing more and more films in theatrical distribution in recent years. An Inconvenient Truth fairly recently, Fahrenheit 9/11. Do you think that documentaries are becoming more popular with general audiences? When I was a kid, there was often a documentary as part of the regular various films that they would show with the feature film. And that disappeared because everybody said nobody wanted to see them.
I think that's part of the change with the documentaries and these types of documentaries where there's a story. There's a real storytelling experience that the audience has brought into. And I think what filmmakers and Open Society Institute and Sundance have really acknowledged as well is that you can make a great, the filmmaker can make a great film, but unless there are many things in place for distribution, grassroots distribution, film festivals, film forum, as well as broadcast on television and alternative means of getting the film out there, then no one's going to see this great story.
Well, I don't know whether there's reality television in Russia, but there sure is here, and I wonder if there's any relationship between documentary films and reality TV.
Well, I think this is the ultimate reality television. It sometimes troubles me that we have all these reality shows, and yet there's plenty of reality in these documentaries, and they need to have a broader audience. So what's interesting about the evolution of the fund is that we started out, we're a global foundation, and most of the films funded earlier on were from Eastern Europe and other parts of the world, but always some American films. In much of the rest of the world, the question of distribution and outlet is actually not as hard a question. There are state television often runs documentaries. There's much more access to a wider audience. Typically here, that's not been the case. As you point out, in recent years, well-made documentaries have found a broader audience, and there's much more. Netflix has an arrangement where a lot of these things are available through Netflix. There are film festivals increasingly that highlight documentaries. Indeed, at Sundance itself, the documentary fund that funds the projects in various stages is not the same as the festival. But,
and then we have American Public Television and HBO also supporting it. So there, perhaps it, because there's more airtime to fill, there are also more documentaries, and that means more people will become interested in doing it. What's the situation in Russia, Antoine? Can documentaries get on television?
In Russia, the situation is pretty bad because, in general, I don't know if you have heard of the latest news, in general, what's going on in Russia in terms of human rights, in terms of freedom of speech. And unfortunately, the television is showing the worst, actually, of what's going on here in this country. And in that sense, I can say that there is actually no real freedom of speech here in this country, because the main source of information is television, and television will never show, for example, the kind of film we have made, although it's got many prizes in festivals within Russia, all the different documentary film festivals, and some of the one of the main reason usually is because of the language, because there are those people are cursing. Of course, if you are showing life as it is, you are showing people the way they are. Of course, you have to show the way they speak, and there is a big taboo on this language. But this is just the excuse. Actually, the problem is more political. And what they are showing on television, on Russian television, is actually of very, very low and actually very bad, I have to say, because they show mostly criminalistic research, reportage. As if the main idea would be to say that your life is bad, or you are living in bad conditions, but there are even some worse stories and maniacs and people killing each other. And this is actually what's going on Russian television, unfortunately.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately, because on Russian television, American radio, there are also time constraints. But my great thanks to you, Antoine Katin.
Thank you.
There Are Women in Russian Villages is playing on Sunday as part of the Film Forum's retrospective celebration of the 10th anniversary of the Soros Sundance Documentary Fund, which begins today with a lot of very important and interesting films. Luckily, they are not censored in this country, although we hope more and more people will go and see them. Bruni Boris is director of the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival. Gary LaMarche is vice president of the Open Society Institute, and also sits on the board of the Sundance Documentary Fund. And it has been my great pleasure to have you all on today's underreported segment. Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.